Hi there, and welcome to the 6th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm your host, Devin Koontzman, toddler expert and the founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges of toddlerhood, nurture their little ones' development, and create confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. And I am so thrilled to be here with Janine Halloran, licensed mental health counselor and founder of Coping Skills for Kids. Welcome, Janine.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to chat with you today. And before we dive in, can you just tell our audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I have been working with kids and teens and their families for over 20 years now. And I've been really focused on helping kids learn how to cope and helping teenagers learn how to cope and helping families figure out what their coping skills are together. I worked in schools for a while. I've worked in community mental health. I've worked in social skills groups. So I have a lot of experience in a lot of different realms, but I'm also a mom. So we were talking before we started recording. I am a mom of two teenagers. So, but I have the memories of being a mom to toddlers and toddlers and preschoolers and dealing with all of that at the same time. And I find a lot of times like the toddler brain and the teenage brain are very similar. So I'm right there with you in some ways in terms of like the interesting ways that their brains are developing at this time in their lives.
Absolutely. There's so much brain development happening. I mean, the first time I read the statistics of, that there's more than a million neuropathways and connections being made every second for the first 3 years of life. I mean, I got fell off my chair. I'm like, what, a million every second? Like, it's mind blowing.
Yeah. So when I was preparing for this, I was thinking about the joy and surprise I would get when my kids would wake up and know new words or have new skills. And I'd be like, what just happened? Like, you just grew overnight. Like, your little brain just like made more connections. And now we're having different conversations because you're that much older and have that much more understanding and knowledge of the world.
Yeah, it's really crazy and exciting and challenging all wrapped up into one, which is why we're here today. And I always like to kick off these conversations by asking, what do you feel makes toddlerhood a challenging and misunderstood developmental period, especially when it comes to kids and their emotions and frustration and things like this?
So I think people sometimes will look at toddlers and when they're having like a hard time, like they're stamping their feet, they're having a tantrum, they're yelling, they're hitting, they're crying, and they think that they're doing it on purpose. And they're really not, like, they're not trying to get you. They're not trying to like hurt your feelings. They're not trying to give you a hard time. They're having a hard time. They are experiencing feelings for the first time. Imagine that. Imagine feeling so angry for the first time in your life. And you're like, what the heck is that? And you don't know what to do with it. It's really confusing and overwhelming. And I think a lot of times for parents, it can be a little bit triggering. It can be hard for parents to sort of like, and caregivers to like sort of deal with all of those big emotions that are coming out of this little creature that you have in front of you. But to sort of be able to take a step back and think, oh gosh, they're not giving me a hard time. They're having a hard time. That they're shifting the language, shifting the thinking around that can help you get into a better place where you are able to be there for them and manage your own stuff so that you can actually do the good job of raising the child.
Yes, this mindset shift is probably the biggest and most foundational work of raising a toddler, is shifting from, okay, they're giving me a hard time, till they're having a hard time. Because when we think, okay, they're giving me a hard time, then it really feeds and fuels the frustration we feel for not being in control and being able to control this little one. Versus when we can shift to they're having a hard time, it opens space for some compassion and for this idea of how can I help my little one, versus in the other mindset, it's more like how can I make my child blank, 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 versus how can I help and support my child? And that's where the magic's going to happen in terms of helping little ones deal with big emotions, including things like frustration.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so today we're really diving into toddlers' frustration and increasing a toddler's frustration tolerance, how to respond to them when they're super frustrated. And we know that toddlerhood is full of frustration because they're learning so many new things. They are also able to do so many new things physically, but maybe not being able to communicate things verbally. And so not feeling understood, especially young toddlers, ages 1 and 2, and older toddlers, maybe they want to have more freedom and more free reign to be in charge and make decisions. And so there's so many reasons frustration comes up. And how do you see toddlers really communicating this frustration to us and telling us, like, hey, I'm having a hard time here. I'm feeling really frustrated.
Yeah. So I see sometimes they will like yell, they will cry, they will get upset, they will stamp their feet. Sometimes they will say the words, I do it myself. I do it myself. I loved that when my kids were, I did, because I knew that they were expressing their like little personalities and they were putting themselves out there and they wanted their locus of control. Like they wanted to be in control, and trying to figure out how to help them manage when they felt frustrated, but also feel like they could have some control in a situation is really hard. It's hard when they're that little, like you are sort of trying to protect them from just like basic safety, you know? So like what, like don't, you can't cross the street without holding my hand, like those sorts of basic things. And that can be really frustrating. They're like, I really want to run. And so trying to figure out that balance of like, okay, they're feeling frustrated, but they also like trying to make sure that they stay safe, trying to find those pockets of opportunity where they can have some control. Like you can either hop across the street or we can slither like a snake, like we can wiggle our bodies like snakes as we cross the street. So it gives them some control in that situation, but you're still getting the goal accomplished of walking across the street in a safe way with me. It's such a challenging time, and they don't always have the words. And that's, I think, the difference when I think about the teenage versus the toddler brain. Teenagers have words, toddlers don't. And so to be able to start having those conversations about what language we can give them to express their emotions, that's huge for toddlers.
So we know that receptive language actually forms before expressive language. So we know that toddlers can understand a lot before they can actually express words back to us. And I can imagine that that feeling must be so frustrating to be able to understand what other people are saying, but not being able to communicate what you're thinking and feeling on the inside. And couple that with toddlers' developmental need to have a sense of control, because their job is to become separate individuals and to learn what it means to be themselves. And they do that by trying to have a sense of control, to seeing what they can do as an individual person. And all this put together can create some pretty epic big feelings, including frustration. And sometimes it just spills over into lots of tantrums and power struggles and saying no. And of course, as you said, me do it.
I do it myself. Yes. And, you know, the thing that I found really helpful actually when I was having my children at that age was trying to figure out ways that they could show me what they were feeling or show me what was going on inside of them. So we actually used sign language when they were really little because they couldn't necessarily form the words, but we were like, just very basic signs. Like it wasn't like I was one of those parents that had like 100 sign language, like things for them. No, we did like basic stuff like hungry or like I want to eat, all done, milk. See, I still remember them because it helped when they were that little. It was a way that they could communicate with me that, you know, this is what I'm feeling, this is what I need, this is what's going on for me right now. And it was a lot less frustrating for them. I found as soon as I was able to like show them what that word meant and they were able to use that, they were like, oh, this is great. I can tell her now, like we're on the same page now. Like, yes, I am all done with this apple. Please get it out of my tray.
Yes. And when we give children this ability to communicate in a new way. It's amazing how we can just see some of the power struggles and some of those big feelings dissipate. And baby sign language is a great way to really reduce some of that frustration. And actually, for anyone who's interested in learning more, I love Lane Ribello's books and resources from Tiny Signs. She has some books, and I found them super helpful in helping even us adults learn some of the basic signs, as you were showing us, so then we can teach our toddlers. Because when we open the lines of communication, frustration is going to reduce. Do you have some other ways that you like to help toddlers kind of open the lines of communication outside of just, you know, expecting them to be able to tell us everything they're thinking and feeling?
So, you know, what's so interesting is like they, if I had to do it over again, I would actually teach my kids signs for feelings. I didn't at that point. Like I was doing basic like skills, but not feelings. So I would actually do that. Like I would use the skill, do that, but use the sign language for emotions. But the other thing I did when my kids were little is we read a lot of books. So I love reading to them. They still love to be read to. They actually listen to audiobooks. But when they were little, I would read to them. So I would bring out books that actually had feelings in them, or in a funny way. Like I have this book, How Are You Peeling? And so it's all these vegetables that have like little beady eyes on them, and it shows different emotions, right? And so it was a really, like, it was goofy and it was silly, but it was a way that we could talk about like, oh, I wonder what they're feeling. Are they feeling sad? They look silly. They look happy. So having conversations when you are just doing something as simple as reading a book. And it doesn't have to be a book that is focused on feelings, right? So you could do something like Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus, which is another, I love Mo Willems. He's so great. So things like Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus, where the pigeon gets really, really mad. Like he gets really mad. So you could, like, even though they don't really explicitly say the pigeon is mad, you can say, gosh, pigeon is yelling. Why is he yelling like that? So I wonder why. So you start the conversation around feelings, because the easier, the more you are able to label the emotion, the easier it is for you to self-regulate. So you name it and then you can tame it. So to give kids that language earlier, to start having the conversations, start talking about feelings, talking about your own feelings. When you're watching TV shows, there's amazing like stuff for like preschoolers, absolutely, that you can start actually even when they're a little bit younger to like start and have conversations like, oh, you know, Peg plus Cat was one of our favorites when we were younger. There was also Ni Hao Kai Lan, which I don't know if it's on anymore, but it was all, you know, she talked about her emotions, and to have conversations with kids around, you know, the things that they are like watching on TV. Like we're watching it together and we're talking about it. So we're like, we're noticing that somebody's face is angry. And what is it about their face that's making them angry? So sometimes, like as they got bigger, I would expand the conversation. Like, what do you notice about their eyes? What do you notice about their cheeks? What do you notice about their lips? How do you know that that's what they're feeling? So it's building those strategies. But when they're starting out, it's when they're really, really little, they can't do that yet. But we can build on that as they get older.
Yeah, there's really so much we can do just simply by noticing and putting it on loudspeaker. I like to call it observe and describe. And so using observe and describe with in books, co-watching TV shows, even, gosh, if you're like in line at the grocery store, maybe like at an ice cream stand or something like this, like you're going to witness all kinds of people and things and emotions. And so there's always, even at the playground, at the park, things like this, there's lots of opportunities to observe and describe what's going on and to create that, I guess we could say that emotional literacy.
Yes, absolutely. There's so, I would do the same thing. It's really, it's interesting because you can build it in much more easily than you think. It just sort of can start, and it feels weird initially, I will be honest. It feels weird initially when you're doing it, but then it becomes part of your everyday. And then they, as your children, they realize, yes, we talk about feelings and emotions all the time. These are acceptable things. Like all feelings are acceptable and we talk about them.
Yeah, I love it. And the more that we can really talk about the full spectrum of emotions and, you know, really describe them all, it does show a level of acceptance and allows kids to know that feeling angry or sad or frustrated is just as typical as feeling happy and excited, that these feelings and emotions aren't good or bad, that they're all part of the human experience. And of course, we need to learn ways to cope with them, which we're going to talk a little bit more about in a few moments. But, you know, this idea that, you know, if we can normalize, that's what I'm looking for. If we can normalize feelings and emotions by talking about them, I think it's really giving kids a really big gift.
Yes, absolutely. To be able to say, like, it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be frustrated. That's normal. That's expected. I sometimes feel frustrated too. This is something that I do. Like, let's do this together. So that they know that it's okay to do that. It's what you do with it. So it's okay to feel that way. It's what you do with that feeling that matters. Like, I want you to use safe hands, not hitting hands, you know, to make sure that we're trying to give them some strategies of ways that they can express that they are feeling frustrated or mad or sad in a way that doesn't hurt themselves, doesn't hurt other people, and doesn't destroy property.
Exactly. And I want to also point out something from two of your examples that I want to point out is that you also have talked about playfulness in the crossing the road example and in the book example with How Are You Peeling? You know, when we can use playfulness as well, like toddlers, young children really relate to play because, well, I think play is really like based in like our emotional brains versus like our logical executive function planning brain. And so I just, toddlers relate so well to that. And so bringing in that playfulness is so important. And, you know, these things that you've talked about, you know, teaching signs, reading books, this narrating, labeling emotions, these are all great things to do in the calm moments, right? But they might not be the time to start in the middle of a big meltdown or crisis. Can you tell us like a little bit more about the difference between like what we might do in the calm moments in terms of building skills versus like how we might cope in the moment when we're in the middle of a tantrum?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So here's the thing. I always say to people, you know, the best time to learn a strategy or a coping skill is when everything is calm. You don't want to start in the middle of an episode where they are having big emotions and you're in the middle of Target and you've got a basket full of things and you cannot leave. Like it's not a helpful time to then start to try and bring up strategies at that point because they aren't hearing you. They're like, their little brains are gone. They're offline. So they like, that's not a teachable moment. That is a moment of sort of like a crisis, if you will. So like you have to think about like crisis management versus like skill building time. So that skill building time is when they're calm. That is when you are hanging out and you are working on different strategies. So like, it could be something where like, let's try and do deep breathing and we can use our stuffy. Let's put our stuffy on our belly, lay down, and let's move our stuffy up and down. And that helps little ones understand that they can take some deep breaths. It helps them to like have a little something that they can move so that it makes it easier for them to understand they need to move their belly rather than their chest when they're doing these deep breaths, right? But when you're in the middle of a crisis, that is not, it's not happening. It's not happening. So what do you do as a parent or as a caregiver when you are in the middle of that crisis moment? For me, I use self-talk, and that is what I recommend because part of keeping the atmosphere in a chill place is your reaction to the issue. So if you start to escalate, then they will escalate more, and then you will escalate more, and then they will escalate more, and suddenly it becomes this really big thing. However, if you set the tone, if you become the thermostat, and not the thermometer. Don't rise and fall with the temperature of the room. You stay steady. If you can be the thermostat, then your child can start to regulate. It can take a little bit of time. I'm not saying that this is like you stay calm and they're gonna like chill out right away immediately. I've been there. I've done that. It's not what happens. But it's like, it's just not real. That's not reality. But if you can continue to stay calm and use your own strategies of taking deep breaths, getting a drink of water, saying these positive things to yourself, my child is having a hard time, not giving me a hard time, then you are more able to be there right there with them and to be able to say, I love you. I'm here when you're ready. And to help, like maybe they need a hug. Maybe they need to squeeze a stuffy. Maybe they just need you to sit right by them. Some kids don't like to be touched when they're having a hard time. Some kids just want to like know that an adult is like near and close by. And to allow it to just dissipate. It's not going to last forever. No feeling lasts forever. So it's just going to, you have to also say that to yourself. Like it's not going to be forever. Eventually they will peter out. Eventually it will stop. And then afterwards, when things are calmer, you can be like, gosh, I noticed that that made it seem to have, you had a hard time. I wonder if you were feeling angry. I wonder what happened. I wonder what we could do next time. I wonder what could happen next time. So I always like to do like a debrief afterwards and keeping the language simple when they're little. You seemed mad. What made you mad? Or using your own detective skills. I noticed that it was really frustrating because you weren't able to get your coat on and that made you really mad. I noticed that your face looked like this. Do you think that that's what you were feeling? Just to check in. And to be able to move on from that. Like, I wonder if there's ways that we could practice you getting on your coat. You could do the flip, the Montessori flip of the coat. And that makes it easier because that's, again, I do it myself, me do it, where they can get a little bit of control. Like, I can figure out a way to get my coat on in a safe way and in a fun way because you flip it. It's like really kind of cool. My kids loved it. And they have that control. They get a little bit of control back.
Yeah. That sense of control is just so important. And, you know, looking at how we can feed that need for control. And I love this idea of being the thermostat. And thanks for bringing back up the mindset shift, because again, it's going to be very challenging to be the thermostat and to have self-talk that is supportive for ourselves and to really, I guess, maybe put into practice our own skills to ground ourselves in these moments. If we're looking at my child being bad, they're doing this to me on purpose, and like having, you know, basically what we make the behavior mean about the child and what we make the behavior mean about ourselves is going to have a very significant impact on our self-talk and how our ability to be the thermostat in that moment. And I just love that, you know, what you shared, it's also what I notice and what I also tell parents is that it's more about you in those moments and seeing how can you stay calm, because our calm will eventually be able to be shared with the child, but they need to have their emotional release as well.
Yes, absolutely.
So this idea of thinking about frustration, so sometimes frustration shows up when toddlers are trying to do things. So we've talked about talking, you know, when they're not able to express themselves and that type of frustration. We've talked about just what happens when it like spills over into like a big meltdown or a tantrum. And then I also want to talk about this idea of frustration that comes up when toddlers are physically trying to do things that they see other people doing, and when they do it, it doesn't look the same, or they're not as quote unquote successful at it. And that brings up feelings of frustration. So whether or not this might be like, I don't know, pouring something into a bowl and it spills, or as you said, putting on a coat, putting on shoes, things like this, where or even sometimes climbing something or even jumping and feeling like they can't jump as far as like an older sibling or you or something. And toddlers feel that really deeply. So how can we support them with in those moments where the frustration's coming more from like a physical skill that they don't see themselves doing? Another ones like I'm thinking about is like cutting with scissors. It can be really frustrating with toddlers if a child saves scissors, things like that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I like to encourage a lot of playtime. because play will get make it easier for them to do those strategies and do those skills. So like pouring, for example. So like you get it, like you bring out like a water table, you bring out beads, you and start with things that aren't as messy. So you start with maybe something like beans or like larger beads so they can pour from one cup to another. And then you can gradually get to something like liquid where you're pouring it from one cup to another and make it playful. I think the thing is, we sort of sometimes ignore play. We think it's not important. Play is actually the way that kids learn. It's the way that they relieve stress. It's a way that they communicate. It is so important and vital, especially when they're toddlers and preschoolers, for them to play. So to encourage that playtime where they are doing those things that could cause frustration, but doing it in a at like multiple times throughout the day where they have the choice to be able to go and do those things and they can practice those skills where they can get better at those skills. Yeah. And to acknowledge it, like, yeah, it's really hard to cut with scissors. It is. It really, like, you don't, it's a gross motor skill and a fine motor skill. That's really hard to like balance all of that. It's hard to pour. It's really hard to pour when you're that little, and it takes a little bit of time, but to acknowledge that frustration, I understand that's really frustrating. You feel like you feel frustrated, and to then try and switch them to another skill that's a little bit easier. Like maybe they're squeezing Play-Doh, because squeezing Play-Doh, pretty fun, pretty easy. Most kids can do it. Like, so they squeeze a little bit, or they get a chance to squeeze like, what's that? Oh, like putty. And then there's other like more tactile things where they're squeezing stuff. So like water beads. I love all sorts of sensory play because I think it can be so soothing for kids and help them learn like, okay, I can like work with this. I can do these things with my hands, and then I'll get better at doing these other things as I get better, as I get older and I practice more.
Yeah. And this idea of just continuing to build the skills, meeting your child where they're at, seeing what's possible, and then building the skills is so important. Because if we try to teach a skill that we think sounds good, but our child's not ready for, that's going to create a whole nother side of frustration. So really this idea of like observing the child and meeting them where they're at, so then you can build the skills as you're giving us ideas for, is super, super supportive. Another, when we're talking about like something that's kind of fun in terms of like touching and playing with, I love using chia seeds, soaked in water. It makes kind of like a gel that's also taste safe, which can also be a nice alternative to water beads, especially because they can be a choking hazard. And so depending on how old your toddler is, or if you have other little ones at home. And so I love chia seeds that kind of give you that still, that kind of like slimy feel to it, I guess you could say.
Another thing I like is oobleck. So it's cornstarch and water together. So it's like this really interesting, like solid yet liquid. So you touch it and it's a really cool sort of like texture, sensory kind of activity. And it's okay. Like it's cornstarch and water. So it's all right.
I love that idea. I haven't heard of that one. And that's a fun idea as well. Okay, great. So we've talked about the different types of areas where frustration pops up, some things that we can do. What about, are there any other skills that you want to teach, that you want to share with us, that we could either teach our toddler to support them with frustration, big feelings and emotions, or if we notice maybe like frustrations popping up often on a daily basis or multiple times a day? Is there just anything else that parents could do to just support their child in, you know, learning these coping skills?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think about making a plan. So a lot of times, you know, we are walking into a day and we're not necessarily sure what the day is going to bring, right? But we can sort of know what are those sort of things that make it a little bit harder. What are the pain points? What are the problem areas? What are the challenging situations? So if we can make a plan beforehand of what to do, like If we know that we want to go to the playground and leaving is hard, like what is our strategy going to be as the adult? What are we going to say? If we know that getting a jacket on is hard, what's our strategy going to be? If we know that we're going to be crossing the street, what's our strategy going to be? So it's a lot of planning, but it can be helpful to plan and preview with your child to say, okay, when it's time to leave the playground, I will give you a 5 minute warning, and then that means you can do 10 more swings on the swing or 10 more slides, because they can't, like, time is hard for them. But if you give like a tidy enough number of things that they get to do, like you can go on this, this, and this one more time, and then it's time to go. And then I always actually would be like, and when we get home, like I planned it, so I would go home for a meal. So I'd be like, and then we can go have lunch. And so that's usually enough of a incentive, or then we can go home and have snack, or then we can, go home and watch that show, or we can read that funny book. So to give an incentive to get to the car to then get home, or get walking down the street to get back home. So I do a lot of preview, and a lot of planning. So there's a lot of stuff that, you sort of have to think about in your head as the adult to take care and help them. And then in those calm moments throughout your day, like if you have a few minutes where you can just talk about, like, let's try a deep breathing exercise together. And you don't have to say it like that because they're too little to get that. But like, let's try five finger breathing. So like, you trace my hand and we'll breathe in and breathe out and breathe in and breathe out. And so you go through your whole hand, and it ends up you take five deep breaths together. I like to do this with little ones, especially because if I hold my hand and they trace, or they hold their little hand out and you trace, and you take your breaths together, that can really help de-escalate a situation. Just the act of deep breathing can really help when things are starting to escalate, to take a few minutes to connect, to regulate together, and then to be able to see if you can move forward in a more positive space. So I love being able to try those things when kids feel calm, because then when things start to escalate, I can say, oh, do you remember when we did this five finger breathing, and make it a little playful. Who do you want? Do you want to trace my hand, or do you want me to trace your hand? Making it a little bit more fun, a little bit more playful in a way that works. And then continuing to talk about, like, let's talk about how it feels in your body when you feel mad. Let's talk about how it feels in your body when you feel happy. Being able to identify and label those things to help them really notice, these are these things that are going on in my body. Because, like, it's really hard. It's really hard to feel those feelings and be like, ah, my hands feel tight. And to be able to help them label that. So you can do a lot of stuff to just set the stage for when things will happen, because things will happen. And the final thing I will say on that is that to be also give yourself grace and your child grace, because no human does anything 100% of the time. So they're going to have tantrums and you're going to lose it. And that is okay. You can repair, you can move forward, you can figure out a different way to do things next time. But give yourself grace and give them grace.
Yes, thank you for that reminder. It is so true. It's a process. It's a learning process. Children are learning. We're learning as adults and caregivers. It's like almost like a reprogramming of our brains to respond in a new way, because maybe this wasn't modeled for us as kids, or we didn't have a chance to learn these skills. So we're learning the skills and teaching the skills at the same time. And so sometimes just modeling practicing the skill ourselves and modeling it is enough. That's enough right there, And it's also meeting ourselves where we're at and building on skills for ourselves. And I think, like, in the end, we can't go wrong with connection. Creating connection is always going to be supportive, and definitely making things concrete. A lot of the examples you gave was like really making it concrete for the toddler. So it's something that they could either visually see or like concretely understand. And these are the things that are going to build on each other and create that success in the long term. So as we're wrapping up and everyone's listening, they might be thinking, okay, I'm ready to create some change in my life and my parenting with my kids. I'm ready to support both of us really in increasing our frustration tolerance, in learning coping skills for frustration. What would you say is one action step that parents and caregivers can take today when they're done listening?
You know, the thing I would say that parents and caregivers can do today is to try one deep breathing exercise. Just do, try and do one deep breathing, even if it means something as simple as let's take 5 slow breaths together. Because sometimes, especially like little kids, when you hear deep breath, they like won't, they will hyperventilate, or they will not blow the breath out. Like, but if you say slow breathing, they get that. So like to breathe in slowly and breathe out slowly. So just to try that together and see how that feels for you. See how that feels for them. Something you can start with, super simple. You don't need any props for that. You just need your voice to be able to say, let's do some slow breathing together and see what happens. See how they respond. You never know. It would be really interesting. I always think of it as like, thinking about parenting is like an experiment in a way. Like you're going to see what happens. You see if it works for them. If it doesn't, okay. But you've now learned a little bit more about yourself and your child.
Yeah. I love it because it will be an experiment, because everything we talk about here, you know, you have to then go and look at, okay, how do I apply this to my unique child, to my unique self and my unique family? So there will be a level of experimenting, and experimenting is also part of practicing and learning, because, you know, it's not like learning's not a one and done thing. So that is for sure. So, is there anything else you'd like to add about helping toddlers cope with and manage frustration before we go?
So the one thing I would say is it's actually not about the toddlers. It's going back to the adults, is to make sure that you are taking care of yourself, because it's very easy, especially as the caregiver or parent of a toddler, to cross yourself off of that list. It is so easy. Like you're like, nope, I'm not gonna go out and do that thing. I'm not gonna read that book. I'm not gonna listen to that podcast. And I would encourage you to make time to, and some space for you to have a little bit of time for yourself, because this is hard work. It's exhausting, and you need to fill your cup. And when the kids are little, it will look different than when your kids are bigger. And so you have to be a little bit more creative. Maybe your calm time is not at your house because you can't do it. So maybe you go to the gym, maybe you go for a walk outside, you call in the reinforcements, find your people and get yourself a break. Like you need a break. It's okay to take a break, and you need to figure out ways that you will recharge and re-energize yourself so you can do the hard and challenging and amazing work of raising toddlers.
Yes. Thank you for that reminder. And I know that you have a gift that you like to offer our audience before we go. Could you tell us more about that?
Sure. So I have a visual coping skills checklist that I use with my littler people, because I do have one that's like only words and script, and it's really hard for little ones to really grasp that. So I created one where it has visuals and words, so it's easier for you to talk through the different strategies that you could use, and gives you some ideas. It gives parents some ideas and caregivers some ideas of things that they can introduce to their kids. So I love to be able to share that with your audience, the visual coping skills checklist.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That's going to be super, super helpful. And in general, where can everyone go to learn more?
Sure. They can go to copingskillsforkids.com.
Awesome. Oh, Janine, thank you so much for being here today, for really sharing your passion and expertise, and for the work that you're doing out there in the world to support all the children, parents, and caregivers in learning how to, you know, cope with our big emotions and be human at the same time.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. I mean, I'm so excited to be able to talk and start talk this conversation about coping skills when kids are little, because it's really important. You build it now, and then you can see it grow as they get older.
I love it. That's why we're here with Transforming Toddlerhood, to create that firm foundation from the beginning. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you, everyone, for watching, and we'll see you all again soon. Bye.